So next we have Emily Wang, who is a PhD student in ethnomusicology at the University of Toronto, where her research is supported by a SHRC Canada Graduate Scholarship. Her doctoral research examines the role of sound, including music, language, and everyday life, in the formation and transmission of collective memory among diasporic Chinese people in Toronto. Welcome, Emily.
So this paper is a kind of a spin-off of my master thesis and represents a relatively early stage, the rumination stage, if you will, of hope something that's hopefully a new project. So I will welcome any suggestions or comments at the end. Quote, to me, the sounds of a night market captures what I think Taiwan is all about, says my interlocutor in Taiwan, Ren Hao. There are just so many different sounds woven together into one, and so many different things bombarding you left and right. It's a microcosm of life on Taiwan, I think, an overload of heterogeneous elements that for some reason work really well together, a method in its madness, if you will. He paused for a second and added conclusively, it's noisy. Yeah, that's what it is. Noisy, hot, or real now in Mandarin is an intersensorial metaphor for the affect that compels you to join the festive crowd that produces both noise and heat in their overjoyed celebration. The noisy, hot situation is not dissimilar to a carnival, though unlike a carnival, the noisy, hot affect permeates the everyday lives of people in Taiwan. Having a visitor in your home can easily be as noisy, hot as a nightly festivity of large crowds in a night market. And this is a picture of a night market. Through participating in noisy hot situations, though participating in a noisy hot situation is a culturally valued practice that demonstrates social competence, noisy hot situations can be loud and disordered in a way that confronts directly the quiet and ordered soundscape of modern public spaces. Such was the case in 2012, when conflicts over the Shida night market blew up all over Taiwanese news and popular media. The Shida night market debacle attracted passionate opinions from residents near the night market, vendors and supporters of the night market, and numerous cultural critiques. But it boils down to one simple question. Is it more important to sound out the noisy hot that is emblematic of Taiwanese-ness to so many people? Or is it more important to keep the noise level under control? Rather than providing yet another answer to this question, I use the question as a starting point to think through the political implications and the complexities of noisy hot in public space, public sphere. Cultural historians such as Helio Schwartz and Karen Bisterville have argued that noise is the sonic parallel of Mary Douglas's famed dirt as matters out of place. As sounds deemed out of place, noise has been a metaphor for and a justification to subjugate the socially out of place. Bisterville noted that historically, quote, the language of foreigners, the drunken turbulence of the poor, the street music of immigrants, and the emotional expressions of evangelical worshippers have all been, at different times and places, characterized as dinged by the ruling classes and religions. Indeed, Bisterville concludes, the right to make noise as well as the right to decide which sounds are allowed or forbidden has long been the privilege of the powerful. If deeming a sound noise is the assertion of power that sound studies scholars have argued to be, what does it mean when the value noisy hot becomes just noise in Taiwanese night market? Who gets to decide if the night market is too noisy as opposed to noisy hot? And if so, for whom is it too noisy? Night markets grew out of ad hoc gatherings, both in cities and in rural townships, of street food vendors on pushcarts. Anthropologist Shender Yu has noted that similar formations can be found across China and the Southeast Asia, and nascent night market-esque gatherings can be traced back to the Tang Dynasty in the 8th and 9th centuries. Night markets are core to today's Taiwanese popular culture. Contemporary night market feature postmodern juxtapositions of latest fashion fads and tempos, brand name commodities and cheap counterfeits, boutique stores and pushcart vendors. Night markets typically take place in a small alley, often in a residential area, and run nightly from around 5 o'clock in the afternoon to midnight or so. Visiting the night markets is more about strolling around than about shopping or eating. The conflicts over the Shida night market was one of the most publicized, but it was not an isolated event. Though historically a guerrilla economy existing on the periphery of Taiwanese society, in the last two decades or so, night markets around Taiwan have gradually become a museum-like spectacle controlled by the state through the Bureau of Tourism, along with its spotlight in promotion of Taiwanese tourism. Night markets have also been shaped into a symbol of Taiwanese folk culture that is core to the production of a Taiwanese national consciousness. The Shilin night market, for instance, has transformed from its traditional disorder into a shopping mall-like institution, where outdoor vendors are moved indoor into a dedicated architecture, as shown on the picture here. And apparently the food vendors are literally going underground in where you see the B1 is. The Tonghua Street Night Market has become a dedicated pedestrian zone with renovated brick roads and signs instructing visitors which directions to walk. The once no-name street vendors now sport business licenses and certificates indicating that they have passed the state inspections. In short, the sounds, sights, smells, and traffic flows are increasingly contained and controlled. So here you can see that all the signs, like the lit signs, are sort of like uniformly designed. It's indoor now and underground, whereas it used to be just like out in the open space and stuff. These changes to the night markets were responded with polarized receptions. Some were glad to see the night markets, quote, cleaned up and, quote, finally presentable enough to for the global gaze, end quote. While others sighed and lamented that the state has essentially, quote, killed the night markets, end quote. Underpinning these debates are conflicting notions of legitimacy and authenticity in Taiwan, which, due to the scope of this paper, we're not going to, but we can talk about that more during the Q&A or later today. Similar debates have surrounded the Shida night market, though in much more dramatic terms. Named after its proximity to the National Taiwan Normal University, Shida, which is a contraction for the National Taiwan Normal University, one of the top-tier schools in Taiwan, the Shida Night Market has been catering to students of nearby universities as well as residents of its host district, Da'an, since the 1980s. Later in this paper, I will talk more about the particular social conditions of Da'an district. For now, I would just note that in 2010, the Shida Night Market became one of Taipei City's official tourism spotlights. Featured as authentic Taiwanese everyday life, nearby bus and subway stops were renamed as Shida Night Markets from its original names, reflecting the official state status of the night market. The night market expanded quickly as the night market as it became foregrounded. So it used to be just on the street, in like some of the small alleys around here. But as it became sort of came under spotlight for the tourism promotion, then they expanded all the way out into all of these smaller alleys and all the way down this street. Mm-hmm. So it has expanded from about 1 acre in its in terms of like how big it was to over 15. I found different data that say it's like 16.5 to 18. So it got pretty big, of over 700 stores, I believe. In late 2011, residents of the neighborhood began to file noise complaints against the vendors of the Shida night markets in quick succession, and formed groups arguing that the night market vendors had severely violated the noise bylaws as well as public space regulations. In response, Taipei's municipality issued cease and desist orders to many of the vendors, some of whom have been selling street food in the night market for over 3 decades. Most of these vendors are independent small-scale businesses that could not afford to move, to renovate, or to lose business on consecutive days, let alone losing their livelihood overnight. Vendors and supporters of the night market thus organized protests and hung yellow ribbons across the night market to show resistance. So this is a picture of during the most heated period of time during the debacle. And so that's the yellow ribbons demonstrating solidarity to the night market vendors. And here's a poster. And this is a banner hung by the resident, and it says, defending my living environment and give me back my peaceful home. So and residents responded with protest banners asking for a peace and quiet home. Many hearings were held, legal hearings. Vendors went to court, and residents of the Greater Da'an area debated hotly over whether to preserve the boisterous, noisy, hot street life or to discipline the night market into a civilized soundscape commensurate with the ivory tower literally next door. Though the debacle is still ongoing with appeals to this day, appeals to repeal to this day, the initial noise complaints have resulted in some material changes. The pushcart street food vendors that were crucial in creating the noisy hot effect are now replaced with clean air-conditioned storefronts selling mostly clothing and accessories. The words Shida Night Market are literally erased from public transit signs. So this is in the Taipei's what they call MRT, and that's basically like a subway system. The stop that goes to the night market, the exit information used to show the Shida Night Market, and as you can see, it's now covered up, so quite literally erased. When I mentioned Shida Night Market to my interlocutor, Ren Hao, just last week, he said, quote, maybe we shouldn't call it a night market anymore, end quote. As an emblem of the common folks' everyday life, the night market is silenced. The interesting thing about the Shida Night Market debacle is perhaps not so much who's right and who's wrong, but how different ideas about noise are butting head. Put differently, this debacle is revealing because it happens right at the point where what is noisy hot, a social cultural phenomenon, crosses the boundary and into just straight up noise, the sound deemed out of place by those in power. Noisy hot has been written about by scholars in the West as early as Clifford Geertz's work on the cockfights in Indonesia. Ethnomusicologist Anne Rasmussen and Tong Soon Lee, as well as anthropologist David Hatfield, has each noted the presence of noisy hot in Southeast Asia and Taiwan. While one could name a noisy hot situation when one sees it, as a concept, noisy hot has a rather fuzzy edge. It exists in practice and in interpretation, and there are no hard and fast rules to determine whether and to what extent a situation is noisy hot. This fuzzy edge is reflected in the noise bylaws in Taiwan. The Noise Control Act of Taipei, for example, has a supplementary clause that exempts, quote, religious ceremonies and folk celebrations, and a night market will fall under the category of folk celebration. And religious ceremonies are also epitomes of noisy hot situations. So these situations are, whether or not they violate the Noise Control Act is at the discretion of the municipality. And so this begs the question, if noisy hot exists so tenuously and indeterminately as something up for interpretation at a policy level, what does it mean when a noisy hot space all of a sudden becomes noisy, just straight up noisy, in such a way that it is deemed illegal? Thinking toward that end, I contextualize the Shida Night Market debacle in what I call noise ideologies of the elite Taipei. In their seminal article, Language Ideology and Linguistic Differentiation, Judith Irvine and Susan Gao suggested that language ideology underpin how we interpret linguistic characteristics. Irvine and Gao define language ideology as the ideas with which participants and observers frame their understandings of linguistic varieties and map those understandings onto people, events, and activities that are significant to them. Given that we all participate in such mapping, Irvine and Gao concluded that, quote, the significance of linguistic differentiation is embedded in the politics of a region and its observers, end quote. And that more important than the conceptual structure of linguistic ideology is its consequences. Here I extend Irvine and Gao's idea onto how people in Taiwan listen to and make meaning of the sound of noisy hot situations. More specifically, I examine how residents of the elite Da'an district in Taipei map noisy hot situations onto sub-ethnic categories, political orientations, and socioeconomic classes that they have deemed othered. So here's a quick side note. In my thesis, I explore noisy how much further as a paradoxical sort of fuzzy concept that operated in Taiwanese identity politics and national imaginations. So I don't want to give the impression that everything is clean cut and definitive, but for the purpose of this presentation, I will give a oversimplified overview here. Fieldwork for noise ideology of Da'an residents was conducted in the Da'an district during the summer of 2011-12 and supplemented with intermittent interviews from early 2011 to May 2013. The Da'an district is located in the center of Taiwan's capital, Taipei, right here. And the district and its residents have garnered a tremendous amount of social capital as the cultural and education center of the nation. Residents take pride of being particularly cultured, as the district houses several of Taiwan's top-tier universities and cultural institutions. Da'an is also home to the Shida Night Market, and part of the residents' argument against the night market's noisy hot sounds is that it ruins the Renwen, or letters and art, atmosphere of the neighborhood. Majority of the residents of Da'an belong to a sub-ethnic group that, while comprising only 14% of the total population in Taiwan, has been dominating the entire Taiwan politically. People in this group are known as Waishengren, or people of the foreign provinces, as they had immigrated to Taiwan from mainland China in 1949 when the Nationalist Party lost mainland to Chinese Communist Party, or are descendants of the 1949 immigration. Waishengren are stereotypically believed to support the dominant Kuomintang, or Nationalist Party, which has been in power for all but 8 years since 1949. In the local constructions through everyday discourse, Waishengren also tend to be in much more privileged socioeconomic conditions and congregate in Taipei, especially in Da'an district. Juxtaposing the archetypal Da'an resident is the Benshengren, or people of this province, whose ancestors had planted roots in Taiwan between the 13th and 16th centuries. Comprising 84% of the population, so that is the majority, and typically in support of the opposition party, the Democratic Progressive Party, Benshengren are discursively constructed as embodying the folk and the working class sensibilities. During my deep hangout in Da'an, I have found that Da'an residents map noisy hot onto the Benshengren, who constitute a social-political other to the Da'an resident that is nonetheless necessary for Da'an residents' conception of a self. At its core, a contestation of self and other through discursively constructed ideology surrounding noisy ha. This mapping, this one, I think, underpins the Shida night market debacle heavily. And again, this typology is oversimplified. My postulation is that complaints against the noise produced by noisy hot night market was only a symptom of a much deeper ideological conflict over the rights to take up public space and make noise. Was the Shida night market really too noisy? If not, why not? And if so, for whom? Perhaps a better question to ask would be, how, when, and why did the sound of noisy hot cross the conceptual boundary into just straight up noise, as sounds of the socially out of place? In this place, I have outlined some of the complex context of Shida night market debacle. My goal here, though, is not to side with either the residents or the vendors of the night market, but rather to foreground the ways in which noise ordinance conflicts may provide insights to local politics and power structures. Noise is not only, quote, a player on the historical scene, end quote, as Helio Schwartz have remarked, but also a way into the fabrics of contemporary social and political life. Thank you.
If this is a useful connection or not, but I think it's always important. I'm just thinking back of our discussion this morning at the IASCOM 30 panel about interdisciplinarity, and one of the things that's great about this organization is that people are coming at things from a number of different disciplinary perspectives. So I think just about all of your references to secondary literature coming out of ethnomusicology or anthropology or that kind of thing. So for me, as somebody who studies popular music from kind of a pop culture perspective or whatever, when you started talking about noise, I immediately went to to Dick Hebdige's study on subculture, right? And how he talks about punk as the noise of punk, and his word is refusal, right? That noise is a kind of refusal. And somebody you cite talks about noise in that way, right? It's culturally, and obviously all the opposition that you talk to is around that idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's useful, or I don't really have a question for you, but I just thought, oh, it's so interesting to think about these things cross-culturally and, you know, how you have some of the same kind of resonances there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's very helpful, actually.
In terms of how I've been trying to figure out a way to think about noise, not only in soundscape, but in music as well, and to, like, sort of, like, you know, bridge these two together. So that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
I'm just thinking back to when we were putting the panel together, noise and how often it was viewed as, like, negative, and Patrick, who's up next, was like, I don't like how it's always referred to as negative. How do we frame this in a way that actually embraces how it can be positive, and it's just more like a culturally and socially decided aspect of whether noise is negative or positive, and how, when it comes into music, when it's seen in the positive.
Right.
Just how many times it's, because even the term noise pollution always has that negative aspect to
exactly.
it. I come into that from the environmental side in a lot of my work, but we were trying to write about it in a way that puts it in a more of a neutral or positive spin on it, especially in discussion of all the different aspects of soundscape. So that's another example of it coming up in that way.
Well, and I think for, you know, in punk culture, it was seen as a means through which they could rebel, right? Mm-hmm. Both visually, because Hebdige talks about visual noise as well as oral noise. Mm-hmm. And for that subculture, it was seen as positive.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of literature that sort of theorizes noise as a form of subversion or resistance.
As well. Resistance, yeah.
So. Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, okay. You have me.